You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, 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 here we are again. A few interesting things are happening. Now, first, I'd like to give you some details about the memorial for John Englert. Memorial has been organised for John Englert. I'll speak about him during the program again, but I did speak about him last week. He was a well-known activist, cyclist, climate change activist, anarchist, and a great keeper of the Australian anarchist history alive through his webpage, Takver, T-A-K-V-E-R. He died unexpectedly about 8 days ago, and age 71. His friends and family have organised a memorial for him next Monday. That's the 28th of January, Monday the 28th of January at St. Mark's Church. St. Mark's Church at the corner of Lee Street, LEE, and Sydney Road in Faulkner. At the corner of Lee Street and Sydney Road in Faulkner. Now, if you've got any photographs of John you'd like to share, you can send them to John, J-O-H-N, dot Englert, E-N-G-L-A-R-T, dot memorial, at gmail.com. That's John, J-O-H-N, dot Englert, dot memorial, at gmail.com. It's about celebrating John's life. So that's on Monday, midday to 4 p.m. St. Mark's Church, corner of Lee Street and Sydney Road in Faulkner. That's opposite the Faulkner Cemetery. Well, near there anyway. All right, now, next Wednesday night, we meet down at Frankston. Listeners to the Anarchist World this week, members of Public Interest Before Corporate Interests, or people are interested in meeting other people with similar ideas, especially if you're out there and you feel isolated, well, you can come up to the dinner. It's in Frankston. It's next Wednesday. That'll be the 30th of July. Starts at 6:30 p.m. at La Porchetta's in Frankston. That's right, La Porchetta's in Frankston, 6:30 p.m. You don't need to ring anybody, just turn up. You pay for your own food and drinks. So it'd be nice to see some new faces and many of the old faces who come on a regular basis. That's next Wednesday night down at La Porchetta's. Now, what else have we got? Now, there is a change in the dinners down at Brunswick for the month of August. That's right, for the month of August, and it'll be on the first Wednesday in August, not the second Wednesday. We will revert to the second Wednesday for the rest of the year. That's the first Wednesday in August. And don't forget that if you're hanging around town and want to visit Parliament House, why don't you join us for the vigil, Public Housing Everybody's Business, midday to 1 p.m. every Thursday. That's midday to 1 p.m. every Thursday. The sacred cows are at the door. They're about to barge in, as sacred cows tend to do. And the sacred cows have entered the studio. They're telling me that we've got to get organised with those folk down at Sydney. The, you know, the folk that transmit us, whatever. Here we go. Courtesy of the Community Radio Network, this program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. My name is Joseph Toscano, and I'm hosting this edition of the Anarchist World this week. Now, I know you're going to tell me that was Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne has died, okay? Well, I'll tell you the history of why we have Black Sabbath as our introductory music. About 20 years ago, a co-producer, Michael Smith, decided that Imagine was a little bit boring and hackneyed, and we needed a little bit of an up-tempo beat to bring in, start the program. So Michael engineered that wonderful introduction. And we've been using it for the past 20 years. Now, I'd just like to remind people that Michael Smith died a few years ago. He was a great addition to the 3CR, which is the radio station I'm broadcasting from. And every time I hear Black Sabbath, I remember Michael Smith and all the great things he did during his life. So, Ozzy, thanks for that. All right, anarchy, anarchos without rulers. It's about creating a society without rulers, not a society without rules. Okay, very simple. What gives rulers the ability to starve people? Inequalities in power and wealth. That's right, the equalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggles, the struggle to devolve, share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Simple concepts, nothing complex, nothing radical. You could even call them motherhood statements. Now, let's start off with something that's a little bit boring, but I think essential. The role of the state in 21st century Australian society. Now, those of you who want to follow this up a little bit further, I've done a YouTube post, which should be up in the next few days, on the public interest before corporate interests YouTube channel, which you can look at, which will goes further into this particular topic. But so what is the role of the state in 21st century Australian society? Now, historically, as you all know, the state's primary function is to ensure that those who rule continue to rule. Simple concept. Unfortunately, for those who ruled, because of revolution and reform movements, what happened in the late 19th century, in the first half of the 20th century, is we saw that the role of the state changed dramatically. The state not only had to keep those in power, but because of revolution and reform, it had to brush crumbs off the corporate table in the direction of the public, the many. And depending on what country you lived in, what sovereign nation state you lived in, and the amount of activity, reformist and revolutionary activity that occurred, the more crumbs that are brushed off the corporate table. And what we saw in Australia at the beginning of the 20th century was a nation state where strikes and go slows and reform activities were at the forefront of people's minds. And we saw a host of reforms introduced, like a social security system, like a universal healthcare system, which was introduced after World War II by the Whitlam-led Labor government, whose 50th anniversary will the fall of the Whitlam Labor government, or the removal of the Whitlam Labor government by the Governor General, will occur on the 11th of November this year, and obviously we'll organise something which we'll keep you about. But what I'm just saying is the role of state had changed. But unfortunately, over the last 5 decades, we've seen a reversion of the role of the state. And this is particularly extreme in Australia. Why is it particularly extreme in Australia, a nation state which is at the forefront of providing services and support for its citizens and permanent residents? Because the Australian Constitution was constructed in such a way as to give no protection for the individual from the arbitrary exercise of state power. And those of you who think that the Australian Constitution gives you the right to free speech, association, the right to strike, think again. Because under the Australian Constitution, you have 4 rights, and only 4 rights as an individual. 1, the right to trial by jury for a major crime, the right to just compensation for the removal of your property by the state, the right to a limited right to freedom of religion, and the right not to be discriminated against. Wow, I hear you say. No, it's not what you think. It's not about discrimination based on gender, sexual orientation, race, nationality. It's about the state you live in. If I slandered Queenslanders, and I was born in Queensland, so I'm not going to slander you because I'm one of you. Sorry about that. Although I was kicked out of the state in 76, but that's a different matter. It is unconstitutional under the Australian Constitution to pass special laws which discriminate against people because of the state they live in. And obviously that was necessary to create the landscape for, you know, federation. So what we've seen over the last 50 years is not just deregulation and privatisation and globalisation and corporatisation, which has basically limited and removed many of the reforms that had been introduced in this country over the last century. But what we've seen is the introduction of draconian laws through Parliament, which removed the right to strike outside an enterprise bargaining agreement period, which can result in the fining of $10,000 a day for anybody who takes strike action outside an enterprise bargaining agreement period, whether they're a member of a union or not. We've seen the draconian laws put in place against so-called anti-terrorist laws, where individuals can be swept off the street by the authorities, kept in detention for 7 days because possibly they may have information, inadvertently have information which may assist the authorities in their investigations. And if you refuse to answer questions, you can be jailed for up to 7 years. And if they kick you out the door after 7 days, you're not allowed to tell anybody or you'll be charged. I wonder what your partner thinks about you disappearing for 7 days, or the kiddies. And the list goes on and on. Look, I'm not going to bore you with that, but what I'm saying is the state is becoming more and more powerful, not just in the USA, not just in Russia, not just in China and other parts of the world, but the state is becoming, the sovereign nation state is becoming much more powerful with the introduction of intrusive technology via which, you know, they can actually, people can actually be they can be under surveillance without them knowing, and the list goes on and on. So the role of the state is changing, not on behalf of the public, the many, but on behalf of that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, which dictates parliamentary policy. Let's move on. There's a productivity round table sideshow, I think next week or the week after. Unfortunately, you and I haven't been invited. I've been waiting for an invitation. I mean, here we are. We're talking about increasing productivity, not just by squeezing the last ounce out of workers, but by changing the productive process, by increasing investment in the country, by introducing tax reform. But unfortunately, the people at the table, the ones that I now am aware of, and I'm not aware of everybody at the table, will be singing from the same song sheet. They'll be singing hymns to Mammon. That's right. The same song sheet. How can we ensure that the few continue to enjoy the fruits of the exploitation of the many? And that's the dilemma, isn't it? When you have a round table, what comes out of the round table is determined to a significant degree by who you invite to that round table. Now, obviously, the federal government has made up its mind regarding what reforms, in inverted commas, or what changes. I don't like to use the word reform, because the word reform implies that things are going to get better, but what changes they're going to introduce to the taxation system. But the dilemma in Australia, and most private investment for private investment, profit for private investment societies, is that power does not lie in the people's representatives in Parliament. Now, every day for the last 73, almost 74 years I've been on this planet, I have heard stories, seen programs, you know, watched the net, you name it. And every time, and even when I do historical analysis and do historical presentations about more important parts of Australian history, you see the same issue crop up over and over and over and over again, irrespective of who forms a majority in Parliament. Now, obviously, under certain political parties, life is a little bit fairer for the population. And under others, it's much more difficult. But the reality is that trying to introduce change through a parliament whose legislative agenda is dominated by that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, who through their control of the legacy media and to a lesser extent social media continue to pump out the same message. There is no other way. Give you an example. Now, the federal government mooted changes to superannuation, which would involve people having more than $3 million in their superannuation account. I think currently there's about 2% of superannuation accounts, whether they're private superannuation companies, or if you put your money, if your money goes into some one of these big mega metropolises, corporations. The fact is that's about 2%. And the hullabaloo we have seen has been extraordinary. And it's been extraordinary because it's been driven by a media whose agenda is set by its owners. It's the same when in 2007, Mr. Rudd, the current ambassador of the USA, tried to introduce a super profits tax on the mining industry. We saw the likes of Gina Rinehart talk about how horrible it all was. So that's the dilemma. Now, I would like to see the productivity roundtable raise some real taxation reform. Things like a 1% financial transaction tax on all transactions over $5,000. Why should we have a goods and services tax of 10% whose major impact is on those who have the least, and not have a financial transaction tax whose major impact would be on those who have the most? I'd like to see the introduction of taxation on corporations at a flat rate, say a 40%. Forget about, you know, deductions, just a flat rate. I'd like to see the introduction of a stock market turnover tax, 1% stock market turnover tax. Every time you buy or sell a share, 1% goes directly to the Treasury. Easy to collect. Everything is computerised on the stock market. You can't even go and watch the boys and girls play anymore because they're playing on their computers in their back rooms. So that's the reality. I'd like to see some real taxation reform. I don't expect it would ever get through the parliament we have today, but you would think at a productivity roundtable you would have this discussion. Now, I have been flabbergasted, I'm sure you haven't had that word for a while, but flabbergasted by the lack of debate regarding how to resolve or address the current housing crisis. Wouldn't it be interesting if somebody at the productivity roundtable sideshow next week or the week after talked about increasing public housing, not social housing, but public housing. So let's see what comes out of this productivity commission. It's a little bit like a Chinese Communist Party, what do they call it, General Assembly they have every year. Everything has been decided beforehand and, hey, presto, at the end of the debate, everybody agrees and, you know, it's all been decided beforehand. It's more like a show trial than anything else. But hopefully I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong in this case because every day you hear the same stories. Increasing in homelessness, more people having trouble keeping a roof over their heads, more Australians suffocated, that's right, suffocated by a society which demands, you know, orthodox cultural norms, and the list goes on and on. The fact is that we do have options. And if we allow these options to be constrained by a preordained productivity round table, we deserve what we get. Because irrespective of whether what I say or what you say is successful or not is irrelevant. What's relevant is those ideas are put into the public debate, like a universal basic income, and the list goes on and on. So think about it, because ultimately, the type of society we have is dependent on the amount of engagement by you. I know it sounds terrible, but it's about public engagement. And if there is no public engagement, and if you think that we are just spectators at our own funeral, well, that's what happens. We are just spectators to be pushed around. Let's move on. Irony piled on irony. Disconnected from reality. The carnage continues. Extraordinary, isn't it? Extraordinary has how we bend over backwards to accommodate war criminals, mass murderers, people who are willing to use brute force, irrespective of the consequences, to quell discontent. I'm going to concentrate on Gaza, because what we are seeing in Gaza, courtesy of the US of A, the buffoon in Washington, courtesy of Germany, believe it or not, is extraordinary. Now, we've seen 28 countries, including Australia and New Zealand, asking for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Let's go through what's happening in Gaza. Let's go through how we bend over backwards in this country to accept the unacceptable. When the defence minister, that war criminal, the war criminal defence minister from Israel, claims that what the 28 nations have called for a ceasefire are disconnected from reality, you begin to understand the magnitude of the problem. If there is one group that's disconnected from reality, is the Israeli government and a shrinking number of Israeli citizens. They're the ones who are disconnected from reality. The fact is, although no foreign reporters, and I'll mention it again, no foreign reporters are allowed to report in Gaza, and they haven't been allowed to report in Gaza since October 2023. The fact is that images continue to come out of Gaza which defy reality. Images of people being shot dead indiscriminately waiting to obtain food because the Israeli authorities think they have pinpointed a Hamas operative lining up for some food, and they decide to discharge tank fire, as well as submachine guns into a crowd to kill that individual, irrespective of the collateral. You like that? Damage. F-18s, drones, missiles, pounding an area half the size of Melbourne into total rubble. The death of over 60,000 people directly as a consequence of that military fuggery. You know, and the way the mass media in this country looks at the situation, although the situation has improved a little bit since the death toll has improved, they talk about people being killed. They're not being killed, they've been murdered, right? We are not talking to a government of reasonable people. We are talking about a government of designated war criminals. We are talking about mass starvation as a weapon of war. We are talking about brutality beyond brutality, where we see F-18s bombing tents, people living in tents. If anybody's disconnected from reality, it's the Israeli government, and as I said before, a shrinking number of Israeli citizens who are becoming concerned about the overreaction of their government in Gaza because it has lost them goodwill around the globe. I mean, to a significant degree, the rise in anti-Semitism that we see is directly related to the situation in Gaza. And if the Israeli authorities believe that through this brutality that somehow the Israeli state will continue to be able to lord it over everybody else in the area, they need to think again, because historically, states that use unlimited force tend to disintegrate. That's the historical situation. So I know it's difficult looking at the pictures coming out of Gaza, bodies piled on carts drawn by donkeys, tiny body bags of children blown to bits while trying to scavenge some food. And the fact is, starvation, and I keep saying I've been a doctor now for 50 years, starvation affects the elderly and the very young first. They're the very first to die. And what we are seeing is that occurring in Gaza, irrespective of the propaganda which is pumped out by the Australian media and the Australian government regarding the situation. It's totally unacceptable. So what can the Australian government do? Let's forget about people who protest. They do what they can. And it's good that people come out every day, everywhere around this country. If they don't come out, it is not there. One thing you can do is look at the pictures. If there's one thing which stopped the slaughter of 3 million Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, it was the pictures that came out of Vietnam. It was the pictures of the civilians who were being murdered by the South Vietnamese authorities, the North Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, and the United States and Australian troops. It was those pictures of utter devastation and misery. Remember, more bombs were dropped on Cambodia, tiny Cambodia, than the whole of the world during World War II. It was those pictures which generated that resistance. And we see the same in Gaza. It's important you look at the pictures. I mean, I've seen a lot of death and I've seen a lot of destruction. I've seen a lot of people die in horrible ways. And that's part and parcel of being a doctor. But the fact is, even I have trouble looking at those images. But we need to look at those images. That's something we can do as an individual. And we need in our conversation to, you know, tell other people what's happening, irrespective of what they think. And as a government, it's all very well signing an undertaking, calling for a ceasefire. Why doesn't the government expel the ambassador of a pariah state, the state of Israel? Why doesn't the Australian government introduce a trade embargo on Israel? Why doesn't the Australian government increase the range of people that which your embargoes are held against, like the Prime Minister of Israel? The fact is, what is happening in Gaza is totally unacceptable. And if countries like Britain and France are serious and they actually signed this 28-nation pact, why don't they send warships outside Israel's territorial waters in Gaza? Let's see what the Israeli authorities will do then. Do they really want to create another world war? It's all very well pummeling Syria and Lebanon and Yemen and Iran. It's a different thing taking on major powers, because there are options that people in authority can take. Options you can't take, options I can't take, but there are options. So the key is you need to continue to be involved in that struggle. And if you talk about irony, now I noticed that Germany didn't actually sign the pact. Now, I know this is, I just want to talk about some unpleasant facts, and that's what the anarchist world is about, unpleasant facts. It wasn't the Palestinians who were responsible for the Holocaust. It was the grandparents and great-grandparents of the people living in Germany today, and all their supporters across Europe, who were bottle-fed and breastfed anti-Semitism as children. They were responsible for the Holocaust. The Palestinians were not responsible for the Holocaust. And when we talk about Hamas breaking out of Gaza and murdering, yeah, I'll use the word murder, over 1,200 Israeli citizens and holding others hostages, the fact is, this was due to the inability of the Israeli state to actually understand what was happening. We were told that they've got the greatest secret service Mossad agency in the world. How come nobody in Mossad knew about it? How come the resistance from the Israeli military forces in the initial hours of that breakout was so limited? I mean, all Netanyahu is trying to do is actually brush over reality. Now, I know that there's minimal things we can actually do as individuals, but if collectively, and I remember the anti-Vietnam War protests, collectively, over years, we can make a difference. And we are making a difference. And we are making a difference. But the irony of Germany not signing the pledge, I mean, why should the Palestinians be punished for the sins of Europeans? What did they do as a people? Why should women and children be slaughtered in such a manner? Why should a whole area of the world be flattened? Why should people be driven to the point of starvation? Do they really want to create another Riviera in Gaza? I doubt it. There are options, and if people want this to stop, we need the supporters of Israel to be brought to account.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
You listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. 3cr.org.au. All right. Remember that old song? No, no, Nanette. No negligence here. Good case, no responsibility. Now, I was going to speak about the Torres Strait Islander case which failed in the federal court regarding the government's responsibility to the Torres Strait Islanders, you know, Australian citizens. You know, the Torres Strait Islander flag is one of the official Australian flags for the damage caused by the climate emergency. All right? Now, the case failed. And didn't fail because of facts. The facts were proven. The science was proven. The flooding is occurring, is increasing, and possibly in the next 30 years we'll see the disappearance of a culture, Torres Strait Islander culture. It's quite possible if the world goes on its merry way. So the federal court judge has to rule on law, what the law is. It's not about interpreting it, which the High Court does. And the federal court judge made a very good case. He said that he accepted the facts. He accepted the science. He accepted that there was damage being done to the Saibai Island, and which is the most northerly island in the Torres Strait. He accepted all that. But under Australian law, he could not accept that the Commonwealth was negligent. Because the Commonwealth government cannot be sued for negligence by policies which are enacted through legislation by Parliament. Parliament is protected from any adverse consequences of its legislative agenda. We saw this when we saw children take the Commonwealth to court in a case 2 or 3 years ago, which was about the Commonwealth having a responsibility to them, to their future, and they needed to tackle climate change. That failed again, basically, on that basis. So the fact is that if we want significant change regarding the climate emergency, and that doesn't just mean the termination of fossil fuels in this country, but the termination of the export of coal from this country, it needs to be enacted in legislation. And the fact is, we saw just in the last few months the Northwest Shelf lease being extended for another 40 years. You begin to understand how Parliament, to a significant degree, is a hostage of the mineral industry. And it's a hostage because of policies that have been put in place which have privatised this country's natural resources, which has allowed transnational and local corporations to dominate the extraction of mineral resources from this continent to the detriment not only of First Nations people, but the detriment of the rest of the population. That's the reality we face every day of our existence. And the fact is that irrespective of court cases being brought regarding the government's responsibility, whether it's to the forthcoming generations, whether it's the people of Torres Strait, whether it's you or me. The fact is, this is about parliamentary legislation, because there's nothing in the Australian Constitution which allows these type of cases to succeed. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au, and I encourage you to access as many of the podcasts as possible. There are hundreds of podcasts of The Anarchist World This Week out there. Now, sick and tired of the wrong people getting Australia Day honours, or I should say Invasion Day honours. Look, it's interesting, isn't it? This country has 2 days on which it honours what are described as outstanding citizens. And unfortunately, most in the upper echelons are nothing more than politicians. Not that I've got anything against politicians who do the right thing by the Australian people, but that's a different debate. 2 days, Invasion Day and Charlie's birthday. How pathetic. How pathetic. How pathetic handing out honours on Invasion Day, a day which is divisive in this country, and Charlie's birthday, another day which is divisive in this country. So in 2004, because the Anarchist Media Institute and the Reclaim the Radical Spirit, the Eureka Celebrations Group, was sick and tired of the same people being honoured, and those who had sacrificed their life working for particular issues, who were ostracised and marginalised, being ignored. We decided to set up the Australia Eureka Medals. And on Eureka Day, which is the 3rd of December every year, at Bakery Hill, the site at which on the 29th of November, 500 Pauli R miners took the Eureka Oath, we swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. We give out 6 Eureka medals to Australians who have, in our opinion, done more to change the trajectory of this country's history than most of those people in the upper echelons of the Australia Day honours or the Australia honours. I mean, I'm not talking about people who receive OAMs. Most of them deserve that honour. I'm talking about those honours you see, about people you wouldn't even turn your back on. So nominations are now open. Nominations will close on the end of October, the 31st of October. They're open now. So if you know somebody, some unsung hero, some unsung heroine out there who has done spent a significant amount of their time and money and energy promoting a more egalitarian community, promoting various issues which would improve the lives of people. Now, this is your chance for them to be publicly recognised. Now, you can email nominations to info@anarchistmedia.org. You can email information to info@pibci.net. You can leave a message on 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489. You can send us a little summary to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. What we need is a name, a paragraph about why you are nominating that particular individual, what they've done, and contact details so we can contact them if they do receive a Eureka Australia Day medal. All right. So nominations are open. They close on the 31st of October. It'll be announced on the 3rd of December. Now's the time for you, and it's up to you. It's up to individuals listening to this program or, looking at the websites, the list goes on and on, to nominate people now. So think about it. Who do you want to nominate? There are hundreds, if not thousands, of ordinary Australians who go out of their way to promote human rights, to promote a more egalitarian community, and are never acknowledged, and in a significant degree are ostracised, marginalised, labelled as losers, people who should know better. But let's not forget, every social movement, every cultural movement, every reform movement, every revolutionary movement starts with ideas. And these ideas are taken up by a minority, and that minority eventually becomes a majority. And things which seemed impossible a few decades ago become part and parcel of everyday existence in this country. So if you know anybody, now's the time to nominate them. I'll mention it again next week. Now, I did mention the unexpected death of John Englert last week, and I assume it's basically people living in Melbourne or Victoria who'd be familiar with John, maybe some people in New South Wales. Now, John Englert was an extraordinary activist. He died unexpectedly at the age of 71 last week. And his friends and family are holding a memorial in his honour on Monday. That's Monday the 28th of July. And you're all welcome. Come along. It's from midday to 4 p.m. Midday to 4 p.m. so people can come in and out during that period. That's Monday the 28th of July. It will be held at St. Mark's Church at the corner of Lee Street and Sydney Road in Faulkner. It will be held at St. Mark's Church at the corner of Lee Street and Sydney Road in Faulkner. Now, if you have any pictures of John you'd like to share, send pictures to John, J-O-H-N, dot Englert, E-N-G-L-A-R-T, dot memorial at gmail.com. John dot Englert dot memorial at gmail.com. Now, John was part of the vigil, the pro-Palestinian vigil, outside the Labor member for, it's not Cobra, I've forgotten, the Labor member for whatever it is, inner city, Mr. Carl Hill, and he hadn't appeared for a few days, and his friends unfortunately found that John had died unexpectedly. So he was not only an activist, he was also the keeper in many regards of Australian anarchist history. His webpage, Takvar, T-A-K-V-E-R, was a labour of love where he catalogued the various moments in Australian anarchist history which were forgotten in many regards. He spent many hours, many days, many weeks, many years building up this, what I believe to be the best historical bank of Australian anarchist history in this country. So some people may have known John as a cyclist. He'd been involved in the cyclist movement for over 50 years. Some people would have known him as that strange little man riding his bicycle with two chihuahuas, his little pets, in the front basket. But John was everywhere and nowhere. He was a great activist. He received a Eureka Australia Day medal Eureka Australia Medal, I should say, Eureka Australia Medal in 2009 for his contributions to the creation of a more egalitarian community. So friends, relatives, people whose life was touched by John, people who didn't know John but want to learn more about him. We invite you to come to his memorial Monday the 28th of July, midday to 4 p.m. at St. Mark's Church at the corner of Lee Street, LEE, and Sydney Road in Faulkner. Lee Street and Sydney Road in Faulkner. Have you got pictures you want to share? And send them to john.englart.memorial@gmail.com. I knew John for over 50 years, and all I can say, he was a gentleman with a will of iron, and he spent all his life trying to create that new world in his heart. Farewell, John. Let's move on. Extraordinary, isn't it? Housing crisis. We've been talking about it for years. And we've got a Prime Minister who grew up in public housing, whose career trajectory was formed by the fact that he was brought up by a single parent in public. PUBLIC housing. That's right. I'll say it again. PUBLIC housing. Is anybody interested? Does anybody know what public housing is? It's extraordinary, isn't it? We see the technocrats from the social housing industry put up their arms, saying more, more, more. Social housing, community housing, affordable housing, whatever you like to call it, is private housing. It may be owned by not-for-profit corporations for taxation reasons, but it is private housing. Public housing gives you security of tenure. And Mr. Albanese's mother and Mr. Albanese as a child had security of tenure. Now, obviously, Mr. Albanese was a bright boy. He went through the public school system. It was that security of tenure, the fact that he could go to the same school because there was no threat of eviction. The fact that he could get enough food on the table because his mother only paid 25% of her pension to keep that roof over their heads. And in 2025, the term public housing has almost become a four-letter word, although it's a six-letter word, but a four-letter word. It's as if the emperor's not wearing any clothes and nobody wants to mention it. We talk about giving money to the private sector to build affordable housing which isn't affordable. We talk about demolishing public housing estates and replacing them with private corporations owning and managing these estates, and maybe if you're lucky, 10% going to social housing, not public housing. This is part of that privatisation agenda, which is such a part of government opposition policy. Whether it's at the state level or the federal level, it's about getting the private sector involved. And as I keep saying, it's a little bit like having a three-way partnership, three people sharing the same beds. Because when you've got public housing, which is publicly owned and publicly managed, there's the tenant and the government organisation. I'm not saying it's a marriage made in heaven, but it's a two-way street. But when you've got social housing, affordable community housing, privately owned housing and the private sector, you know, dominating the housing market, it's a little bit like having somebody in the middle of the bed. No wonder there is so little social housing in Australia today, less than 4%. And public housing, I think, is less than 1.5% and rapidly diminishing. And Victoria, the state from which this program comes to you, is the worst state in this country regarding access to public housing. With, you know, they're going to demolish thousands and displace tens of thousands of people from public housing estates. Not be put into new public housing, but shunted into social housing. Extraordinary. And we continue to think that this is the way forward. Wouldn't it be nice to see somebody at the Productivity Roundtable, that little sideshow which will go on next week or the week after, which you and I haven't been invited to, raise the issue of public housing? Wouldn't it be nice to remind the Prime Minister the fact that he's able to afford a $4 million sea coast mansion courtesy of the Australian public is due to the fact that he had stable accommodation in public housing, that his mother and himself were able to enjoy the fact that the state looked after their interests. You've been listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Don't forget, we are in interesting times, that old Chinese curse, interesting times. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week. You can send emails to info@anarchistmedia.org. You can send emails to info@publicinterestbeforecorporateinterests.net. You can write to us. Yes, we do answer letters. Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Although it'll cost you $1.70 in stamps. You can email, you can go to the YouTube channel, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, josephtoscano.com, Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. Ultimately, it's your engagement that is the fuel that is necessary to initiate change. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week on Community Radio 3CR, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of those wonderful people at the Community Radio Network. Listen in next week to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station. And if your local community radio station doesn't broadcast The Anarchist World this week, ask the station manager if they why not. And if they're members of the Community Radio Network, they can broadcast it at any time they like. Listen in to The Anarchist World this week, next week on your local community radio station.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.